Welcome to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets, today featuring her sister, best-selling author, speaker, and holistic physical therapist, Sally Morgan. Are you looking for a deeper connection with your animals, exploring options in alternative healing modalities, searching for training options that you feel good about? Listen now to Sally as she interviews the top experts that answer your questions to help keep your pets naturally healthy.
Hello, and you are listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets, and I am Sally Morgan, Dr. Judy Morgan's sister, a holistic physical therapist for pets and people, and your host today. You can hear this show every Monday and Tuesday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on DreamVision7Radio.com. Today I'm here with my guest, Leslie Desmond, and she is an amazing horsewoman whose life has overlapped my own at several points. And she is a lifelong horsewoman with a background as a freelance photojournalist along with her career in horses, and she still writes and produces learning materials for horse owners. She has a degree in journalism from Boston University, and she was born in Germany to American parents. She began training horses and teaching beginners at age 11 for $50 a week for a family's equine business, and she's never stopped since then. She had her first ride at age 4, which she says was quite a fast one. She has never owned a TV and still doesn't. In 1984, she was married and began a riding stable and then moved that stable to Marin County, California, where she met Ray Hunt, a well-known horseman. She became very involved in showing jumpers in the 60s when she was living in Missouri, and she worked at Firestone Farm in Delray Beach, California, galloping racehorses. Since then, she has worked with draft horses, ponies, gated horses, and today she still works training people how to train horses. Welcome, Leslie. It's a pleasure to have you with us today. And do you have anything to add to that information about you?
Oh, that's great. No, I'm happy to be here. Thank you so much, Sally. No, it was the only little thing on my bio there was just a really detail and understandable little thing that I probably said wrong when we spoke, and that was in Delray Beach, Florida.
Florida. I see.
No, I was actually the Firestone Farm was a training facility that was, at least the year I was there, was really in kind of a compromised situation because part of it had been rented out to trotters and part of it had been rented out to the show world for the A circuit down there for the winter tour, and then there were also thoroughbreds, and I had been hired to go down there and gallop horses. So it was on those misty mornings, you know, dark 4 a.m. you're in the barn and you're trying to figure out how to negotiate the limited space there at top speed between the 2-year-olds and the sulkies and the 2-year-olds you were on top of going.
That's pretty confusing, running racehorses next to trotters.
Well, actually, we weren't next to them. That was the thing, that all of the contracts had been put in place and we had to go the other way. So we learned how to share the track at top speed, and it was really good for the horses because they got pretty well accustomed to things on both sides of them coming at them, and I bet it was probably a good crop of colts that year, both in the trotters and the thoroughbreds. But otherwise, the bio was fine, and I've been happily working with horses and horse people for the better part of my life. I've certainly had other jobs from time to time, but really this is the main magnet for me and probably my reason for being.
Well, you're probably best known to some people for your book that you wrote with Bill Durrance called True Horsemanship Through Feel. So can you tell us a little bit how you got involved with Bill and your history that led up to that meeting?
Well, it's really simple. Yes, I can. After I met Ray Hunt, I went about 30 days later. I saw Ray for the first time in Red Bluff, California in 1990. And then I was fortunate to be pointed in the direction of someone who had earlier been a student of his, who was talking about Ray's mentor. And Ray's mentor happened to have been Tom Dorrance. And he...
Who is Bill's brother.
That was Bill's brother. He was one of 8 from the Dorrance family up in Enterprise, Oregon. Bill and Tom, who were brothers, had six other siblings, and they came out of Oregon. And so they had been basically settlers, was really what his parents were. But by the time Bill and his brother Fred, who came first in 1923, I believe it was, and Bill came down to California in 1931, they did quite a bit with horses all through that ranching country. And then later on, Tom also was down there, and by the time I was in my early 30s out there in California and running my school in Marin, I had had the good fortune to find a direct route from Ray to Tom through a mutual student of theirs, and then later to Buck, and things just got, you know, clearer and clearer after that. It was easier for me to probably understand when I could see just things that I recognized a little bit more, and what I recognized, you know, it was Tom was a little bit older at the time, and Ray rode Western. I had ridden English and some Western, but, you know, Buck was pretty well versed in just where the horse should be putting his feet, and he was probably speaking in a way that I understood a little better at the time. So I kind of just connected the dots, and then not too long after that, I met Tom's older brother, Bill, and he asked me to write his book for him, and I did.
Ah, what a great invitation to have a well-known horseman like that with so much wisdom invite you to write a book. What was that experience like working with him?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that question. Could you say it one more time?
What was your experience like working with Bill to write that book? What a wonderful opportunity that was for you.
Oh, yes. No, it was lovely. It was perplexing in the beginning because the way I was presented with the notion that he wanted to write the book was a little bit obscure. He said the fellow would write a book if he only knew how, after he was teaching me many things that were of value and that I had never even thought of. I was really a very avid student, but he said a couple of times the fellow would write a book if he only knew how. And I was a journalist at the time, and I was writing articles for a little magazine called The Trail Less Traveled, and I had magazine articles out in other publications as well. I wrote about a lot of things, not just horses at the time, the environment and lakes and streams and ponds and so on. But I went out and I tried to find a tutor for Bill. I didn't realize he was just trying to sidle up to my pen and see if it could write a book. And so he was really very sincere in his statement, but I didn't understand him. And that's not only how I didn't understand him. I didn't understand a huge amount of what he said, because that's the way he spoke. He would never set you up to say no. So he said a fellow would write a book if he only knew how. And he was always setting horses up to say yes. So he set me up to say yes by saying a fellow would write a book if he only knew how, but I didn't know how Bill spoke or what he meant. So finally I talked to someone who knew him. It was actually Joe Walter who I first heard about Bill from, and Joe is a wonderful person and a wonderful horseman, really, really skilled, and was very close to Bill, and they had a mutual admiration for one another. And so when I mentioned that to Joe, he said, oh, well, he'd actually probably like you to take a try at that. Maybe he'd like to talk to you about writing his book. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, that might be just the way he's expressing it. And so I asked Bill straight out whether he'd like me to write his book. And he said, oh, yeah, well, if a fella has time, why, that'd be a good idea. So with that, you know, because that was about an 8-week delay in me getting started on his book, by the way. So how was it? What was my experience like? I had to learn how Bill spoke. I had to learn what he meant by what he said. And that's kind of what we really need to have a little empathy for the horses, because they're trying to figure out what we mean by what we do. So learning how to understand Bill and learning how to understand a horse in Bill's way kind of happened at the same time. It was really very interesting, and took me, I'm sorry to say, 5 years to understand even at the start of what Bill was doing with horses, and I finished his book at about that time. in 1999. So, yeah, it was a wonderful, wonderful, it was an odyssey, really. It was a journey. It was incredible. I wouldn't have traded it for anything, and I still marvel and wonder why I got that chance to do that for him, and I don't have one regret about it or anything associated with it. I couldn't say it was an easy journey. I couldn't say that at all, but as they say, the proof is in the pudding, and it was well worth it in the end, so, you know.
Well, it sounds like working with him was a lot like being a horse trained by him, which is always a great learning experience for a person. Can you tell me, where do you start working with a horse when you find that things are not right with a horse? What do you talk to the owners about? What do you focus on, and how do you begin when you're working with a horse?
Well, that's a great question. If the owners are there, it's a different experience for me than if they're not there, because if I have to assess and read and take stock of what the horse is all about and what he's doing and how he's feeling with the people standing there, then clearly if there's a problem with the horse and the people and their connection, then I haven't, you know, then I'm actually there as an interpreter and not really interacting, because always the presence of someone who is disturbing to a horse or who is not getting along well with a horse, that presence will be felt. So I don't really get my own clear read back on that animal. So those are sort of two different questions for me. One, what do I tell a person? That would be separate from what I'm feeling and reading from the horse. But basically, if there's a problem in the connection, it's because if you want to get right down to the basics, the horse only needs you to know one thing, and that doesn't matter whether, this is my opinion, it's not a fact, I'll just say it's an opinion, because I don't want to crowd anybody's belief systems or upset anybody out there who might have a lot of attachment to another belief. But I'll just say that for me, what I've noticed, and I can't tell you how many horses I've trained or ridden or anything like it, I just know it's been a countless number.
A lot.
yeah, I've met very many. But I'm pretty convinced that there's only one thing that they need us to know, and that's whether you're dealing with a draft or a mini or a thoroughbred, cutter, reiner, you know, any kind of military horse, or you name it. They really want one thing clear from us, and I think that it's the same thing that they discuss and negotiate when they're alone or when they're, or not alone, but when they're with one another or whether they're in a herd, and that is, where should I put my feet? In what sequence? At what speed? And when?
Mm-hmm.
Very little else is necessary to know. And all of that really applies. Let's say you're just talking about up-down pony club walk-trot lessons, or, you know, beginning backyard bareback on the pony, get bucked off every afternoon lessons, or whatever it is. You could be a first-time adult owner of a young horse in training. It's still the same concern. The horse is going to say, well, where do you want me to put my feet? Should I walk? Okay, well, walk where and when? How fast should I walk? Should I walk to the left? Should I walk to the right? Should I walk slowly and stop so that you can get off because I can feel you're scared? Or should I just get ready to make my walk, jog, trot transition to the lope? And what's needed with my feet, you see? And so much of the time, we're not really thinking about the feet. We're thinking about many other things.
So how do you get started working with a horse's feet?
Well, first of all, if you can hear what I just said and take it on board and try to empathize with the horse who's only got his feet to please you with, you know, the problem for horses is that if you really want them to be responsive and respectful, you can't be treating them like a dog and feeding them by hand so that they get rewarded for bringing their feet right up into your space, and then they get slapped by the same hand a second later for being too close. That's one thing that'll really mess up the whole thing. So how you get started on reading horses is to understand that they are flight animals, and flight animals are omnivores, grass eaters. They are not meat eaters, and their eyes are not directly on the front of their face like a puppy or a kitten or a child. And they have a different brain and a different way of understanding human emotion and a different way of understanding fight and flight. So although most horses seem very willing to get along with people, A lot of them will get along right until they get in trouble. They'll take all the treats and handouts, and then they'll get punished and corrected for understanding the exact lesson, which is come here so I can reward you with the treat out of my hand for crowding me. And, you know, whether the person is sitting up against an electric fence or in a trailer or too close to a wall or another horse that kicks them, the horse can't be responsible for all that. Mm-hmm. All he knows is I just got trained to come and eat out of your hand, and now I'm getting punched in the nose. I've got my rope and halter on. I just got knocked in the nose for being that close, for 1.5 seconds after I took the apple. Now I jump back from that punch in the nose. I've got a chain over that nose, and now I'm right back in your face again, and I get another punch in the nose. So those are things that people who have been historically loving horses and confused about how seemingly close or aggressive or crowding or unworkable they are, it's time to sort of reexamine what it means to be fair in your presentation of affection. So to really get clear about how to read the horse, ride the feet, and have the feet available, one might want to reconsider how a treat is presented and offer it in a bucket on the ground or toss it out into the paddock or pasture so the horse doesn't have to have the experience of getting punished for believing that you want to love on him by feeding him by hand.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yeah. But there are countless people out there who really enjoy giving their horse a treat at some point. Is there a way to give your horse a treat besides putting it in a bucket or tossing it in the pasture? Can you ever give your horse a peppermint after you ride? Like, what do you suggest for people who like to do that?
Well, if they like to do it, just keep doing it. I'm not anybody's boss.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's a little bit like telling your hungry child, after you've just made a batch of cookies, but you want them to eat, you know, a pork roast with broccoli and carrots, you know, an hour
right.
later. Don't eat that cookie or you're a bad boy or bad girl. You're going to get a spanking and go to your room. I mean,
right.
you have, if you really are a horse person and a horse lover, then set them up to succeed. A horse, it's not up to the horse to decide whether that hand they're about to take a carrot or an apple from or a peppermint is going to slap them in the nose the next moment. It's not up to them to determine whether it's right or wrong. They just know it's a fact, and it creates a whole other schism in the connection, and it leaves the rider largely dependent on, you know, other types of contrivances to get control of the feet, because anything to do with the head then needs to be managed through pain or
right.
confinement.
Right.
So it just depends on how you want to express yourself toward that animal and how you want to, I mean, if you want... to feed a horse by hand and you're happy with the ride and the training and all of the stuff that goes on, don't change anything.
So if you're working with a first-time horse owner or a beginner adult, what is it you think your horse would like those people to know?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say it would be most helpful for a horse who is in front of a beginning, will you say first-time rider, first-time horse owner?
Yeah, beginning horse owner.
Yeah, it would be most helpful for that horse if they were reassured that that person had somebody good to talk to, knowledgeable, and that the burning desire to understand the horse was at the top of their list, not the desire to go to a show or impress people or, you know, have the horse as a status symbol, because that's just a guarantee they'll be off to the auction in another, or a resale barn in another, you know, few months. Those fantasies get old fast. You know, this is not like having, you got a 1,000-pound lawnmower that you're going to keep alone. I mean, horses need company.
Yeah, that's so important.
Yes, they need to be able to eat. They need to be able to eat with their heads down, have another horse to be with. At a minimum, absolute minimum, to see and listen to and smell and touch if they can, and if they can't touch it because the accommodations are limited or the price is too expensive to keep it with another, or you've got different fears about the horse getting hurt and whatnot, you're much more likely to get a horse hurt, in my opinion, by keeping it by itself. Because by the time it's been sensory deprived and kept out of a herd and it does get with another horse, their shenanigans could be, you know, sufficient to create all kinds of energy levels and exhibitions that could lead to greater trouble than if you just turned them out on enough space to hang out by themselves.
So now we need to take a break to hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back in a few minutes with more of our show. We'll be right back.
Interested in learning more? Visit physical therapist Sally Morgan's website at sallymorganpt.com, where you will find details about her upcoming speaking engagements, craniosacral therapy, and Tellington T-Touch offerings, as well as information about holistic care for animals. Join the mailing list today and be the first to learn about upcoming events and special offers. Sally Morgan is a best-selling author, and her book, Dances of the Heart, Connecting with Animals, details her journey of learning to listen to animals. Her unique set of animal connection cards offers 52 activities to enhance your relationships with the animals in your life, and she suggests that you ask your pet to choose a card each week. Both Sally's book and her cards are available on Amazon and her website, sallymorganpt.com. Join Sally Morgan PT CST Daily on Facebook for conversations with the corgi, and visit YouTube for past episodes as well as Sally's TED Talk.
When it comes to our pets' health, you can never be too careful. We invest significant time in ensuring that they have long and happy lives, but it's important to invest the same dedication into our own longevity. The key active ingredient in Dr. Morgan's wellness formula, Pure New Zealand Deer Antler Velvet, is now available as a standalone human-grade product. Life Deer Antler Velvet is a whole food supplement rich in calcium and collagen to support healthy joints and strong bones. Our products prioritize purity, ethical harvesting, and quality sourcing above all else. Visit DAVLife.com to learn more and order your first bottle today.
Tune into world-renowned author, speaker, and holistic veterinarian Dr. Judy Morgan, and now radio host of Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Monday and Tuesday, 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Not sure which vaccinations should be given or how often? Not sure which food is best for your individual pet? Find out the answers to your questions in this weekly show, where Dr. Judy interviews top experts and showcases the latest products that will help your pets stay naturally healthy.
Does your dog have bad breath? Tired of spending money on expensive dental procedures? Try out Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops today and save money while maintaining your pet's oral health. With New Zealand Deer Antler Velvet as the primary ingredient, Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops are effective for treating stomatitis, gingivitis, and ulcers. You can purchase Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops directly from Amazon Prime or from her website, www.drjudymorgan.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets on DreamVision7Radio.com. And I'm your host, holistic physical therapist for pets and people, Sally Morgan, and I'm Dr. Judy Morgan's sister. I'm here with my guest today, Leslie Desmond, a renowned horsewoman, and we've been talking about what your horse would like you to know in order to develop a relationship with him. Leslie, tell us more about how we can develop a relationship with our horses, whether we're first-time horse owners or have had a horse for 10 years.
Okay. Well, those are two different things, but I think, you know, as with any relationship, you have to look at what's working, what's not, where it's comfortable, where it's not comfortable. And I think the main thing is that what most people will probably agree on is that their horse is a little bit too close a lot of the time. And what I think to have some empathy for the animal, it's important to realize that most people are taught through many schools of horsemanship and through many in many countries and still taught today in the show world and in the English and Western show world that you need to hold the horse by a rope or a chain or a set of reins right under directly under the chin with your hand. Now, if you have your arm all the way open and your elbow locked straight and you are standing as far away from that halter knot or that set of reins as you can, you will just barely clear that horse's left shoulder with your right hip. And that's the training that a lot of people get, is not to bother with all that, but just to sort of hold the horse in a normal way walking along, which puts your hip and your legs right directly in front of the left shoulder for most right-handed people. And actually the equipment is still fashioned for and produced, in the model of what the military equipment was made, which is that it all fastens on the left so that a right-handed guy can have his sword conveniently positioned to get on without having to get his leg over that sword in a hurry when he goes into battle. So we're still sort of operating in an old, motif there.
Right.
We're still operating as though everyone in the world is right-handed and that we still have a mounted cavalry and everybody's riding off to the front
with
line with a sword dangling down and some shield draped somewhere else. Well, that just isn't the case. So for that reason, actually, to be honest, I have I've put together a right-tied halter. You can put your halter inside out if you want your rope halter, or you can make your own or get the kind that has a latch on both sides across the brow, across the back of the head. But just to remember that the horse needs to be able to understand clearly on both sides of his body what it is that you're doing and when and what your expectations are. So I think the first thing to remember, whether you've had a horse a long time and things are going well, then just keep doing what you're doing. But if you've had one or two horses and it sort of always ends the same way, I've known a number of people, that have had five or six or seven horses and they get the same complaint with every one. And some point, if I know the person well enough, I'll mention that the only thing that all those horses have in common is them. And then we can get a discussion going about what expectations they had that the horses couldn't meet. And then sometimes that's helpful to, just sort of get a discussion going where they can start to think about what the horse needs them to know, which is that in a 4-beat walk or a 2-beat trot or a 2-beat backup, there is a certain way to ask that doesn't offend the horse. And one of the things that people most commonly do is shake a rope back and forth in the horse's face and want him to back up. And I'll say that that has become actually sort of standard fare. That's like having coffee on the menu at a diner. Nobody even questions it, but the horse certainly does, because by the time a rope swinging left and right in your face means back up and you've figured that out, your understanding of left and right is completely gone.
Well, and they can't see so much of that rope given where their peripheral vision is and their eyes on the sides of their head, so it makes it even more confusing to them.
So the best thing for somebody, my advice is that somebody could get Bill's book is out of print now, and there are some copies left, but basically there's a chapter in Bill's book that he wrote, and that I wrote it for him, but I was helping him get it on paper, we could say. This is his book that we wrote together kind of thing. I had my little sections of it that I wrote, but basically it was to get his message out his way. And in chapter 4 of that book, there are some really, really clear steps that you take to establish the horse's basic receptivity, how to prepare the horse to understand what you mean by what you do. And the first thing you do is you get the neck available. If you can't raise and lower the neck and bring the head and neck from side to side, probably riding is going to be pretty tough, because the connection that the horse has to the ground through his feet is he's attached to his spine in a different way than we are and in a different way than dogs are, because he attaches to the spine at the hip. His shoulders are connected to his front legs and to his spine with sinew, what we would call tendons, muscle, ligament, all kinds of soft tissue. The whole thing is held together with all those, we have collarbones that hold our shoulders onto our spine. That's our connection there. And instead of that, they have the ability to really reach with the shoulder, where if they had a collarbone, they wouldn't be able to do the kind of work that dressage horses and cutters do. And any horse that's, galloping or really trying to navigate some difficult terrain, they really need to be able to open up those shoulders and stretch. So the great maker didn't give them a bone there that limits that movement. And because of that, it's really important to understand that the horse can function well with a free shoulder if he's not tempted into sin by a lot of hand-fed treats that make him park on the front end. You see, when you want to have a right rein mean go right and a left rein mean go left, so often what happens nowadays because of the groundwork lessons that are out there is that the horse gets heavy in front, he pivots on a front foot, and to make a right turn, he steps his hips to the left. Make a left turn, steps his hips to the right, and that'll happen for a lot of people who have followed what is considered now conventional, accepted, you know, like $1.50 coffee at the diner. It's not even in question. You just continue to step your horse's hips over in the conventional wisdom of the groundwork that's available today. But what that causes the horse to do is to load the front end. And for him, there's not a whole lot of difference between your halter rope and your reins. So by the time he's been stepped over 10,000 times to the left or right with his hips and you take that rein and you're riding, he thinks that the idea is to get heavy in front, kick his hips out of gear, and then wait for you to kick him.
Not very fair to the horse. And, you know, so many people, no matter what their style of riding, their instructors or trainers are trying constantly to get them to engage the hind end through lots of different methods. And when you look at what you're saying, I mean, it's so unfair when you start with how you treat your horse on the ground and you begin there training your horse to be on the forehand, and then you spend all of this money getting people to help you teach your horse to get off the forehand.
Well, that's why I made the observation that if you could satisfy yourself with putting his treats on the bucket on the ground or just understand that they taste just as good to him, and then you can get yourself another sort of emotional satisfaction and friendly fix with your horse by learning how to rub his legs, get better care of his feet. One of the things a horse never gets any attention on at all is the bone that's in the middle of his tail. And nobody ever goes back there and scratches that with their fingernails and pulls the ticks off the tail. And I'm sure there are people who do, but I even had a customer a couple of years ago, two or three of them, that thought that the tail was just a puff of hair that came out the back of their butt.
No.
They were absolutely horrified to find out that there was a bone that came all the way down like a dog. And I thought to myself, how cute, because, you know, as much as they sort of have a sort of a family pet, family dog relationship with that horse, I don't know why it was so disgusting to think that the horse had a tail in his, or bone in his tail. But anyway, you never know what people think, but you want to be supportive. And I think the most thing you could do, the best thing and the most loving thing you could do as a horse trainer is never believe that you've reached the end of the road as a trainer and a coach, because there's always something to learn. That's the thing that so impressed me about Bill when he was, I guess he passed when he was 93, about 5 weeks after we finished writing his book together. And, you know, he was still trying to figure out how to get a certain thing going with a mare that he had. He wanted her to get good about having a rope go across her back end in case somebody had roped the calf and it went scooting out behind. He wanted to figure out what he could do in his condition at that age. He was actually roping right up till he was 92.
Pretty impressive.
And roping well, yeah, he did. He went to the Brandings and roped, and he held his own in his end of the pen there. And, you know, he was a lifetime horseman, and so he was still perplexed and discussing with me just, you know, days before the end of his very productive and wonderful life. He was really a wonderful person, and he gave a lot of energy and a lot of wonderful information and time to people who needed it. And he ran a really good business and a really good ranch. So right even before he was just ready at the end of that chapter, I can say that he was still talking about and thinking about how to manage the relationship between, you know, the speed you're taking the horse down the fence and how fast you're going to have to go and what kind of preparations you'll have to have in the foundation of a horse before you take the slack out of a leading rein and where you want to have your weight and why you don't want to do it a certain way and why you do want to do it another way. I mean, this was ever present on his mind, and I was really honored to be listening.
Well, and it's really wonderful to know that even up until his late age in life, he was still learning from horses and from his experiences with them, because so many of us value our relationships with the animals in our lives and for the lessons that we learn from them. And often we have regrets for things we've done in the past, but animals are forgiving and welcome our continued learning with them. And it's such a privilege, really, to spend time with animals and people who know so much about them. We are coming up on another break here in a moment, but when we come back, Leslie, I'd love it if you could tell us some more about how we can work with the horses in our lives. So we're going to hear from our sponsors. You're listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets, and I'm physical therapist for pets and people, Sally Morgan, and we're on DreamVision7Radio.com. We'll be back in just a few moments.
Interested in learning more? Visit physical therapist Sally Morgan's website at sallymorganpt.com, where you will find details about her upcoming speaking engagements, craniosacral therapy, and Tellington T-Touch offerings, as well as information about holistic care for animals. Join the mailing list today and be the first to learn about upcoming events and special offers. Sally Morgan is a best-selling author, and her book, Dances of the Heart, Connecting with Animals, details her journey of learning to listen to animals. Her unique set of animal connection cards offers 52 activities to enhance your relationships with the animals in your life, and she suggests that you ask your pet to choose a card each week. Both Sally's book and her cards are available on Amazon and her website, sallymorganpt.com. Join Sally Morgan PT CST Daily on Facebook for conversations with the corgi, and visit YouTube for past episodes as well as Sally's TED Talk.
When it comes to our pet's health, you can never be too careful. We invest significant time in ensuring that they have long and happy lives, but it's important to invest the same dedication into our own longevity. The key active ingredient in Dr. Morgan's wellness formula, pure New Zealand deer antler velvet, is now available as a standalone human-grade product. Life Deer Antler Velvet is a whole food supplement rich in calcium and collagen to support healthy joints and strong bones. Our products prioritize purity, ethical harvesting, and quality sourcing above all else. Visit DAVLife.com to learn more and order your first bottle today.
Tune in to world-renowned author, speaker, and holistic veterinarian Dr. Judy Morgan, and now radio host of Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Monday and Tuesday, 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Not sure which vaccinations should be given or how often? Not sure which food is best for your individual pet? Find out the answers to your questions in this weekly show, where Dr. Judy interviews top experts and showcases the latest products that will help your pets stay naturally healthy.
Does your dog have bad breath? Tired of spending money on expensive dental procedures? Try out Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops today and save money while maintaining your pet's oral health. With New Zealand deer antler velvet as the primary ingredient, Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops are effective for treating stomatitis, gingivitis, and ulcers. You can purchase Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops directly from Amazon Prime or from her website, www.drjudymorgan.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back. You're listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets, and I'm holistic physical therapist and Dr. Judy Morgan's sister, Sally Morgan. And we're here today with my guest, Leslie Desmond, co-author with Bill Dorrance of the book True Horsemanship Through Feel. And we've been talking about how you can work with your own horse. And Leslie, I know a lot of people have questions about how to correct their horse and how to know when they need to correct their horse. So can you tell us more about how to make it easy for the horse to do the right thing and harder for the horse to do the wrong thing?
Okay, I'll do my best. That's a really big question because we all want our horses to do what we want. I'm going to say in the clearest possible way that I can explain it is that before you correct a horse, maybe it's not safe to assume, but the assumption to someone watching from the outside would be let's say if you're watching someone punish a horse or correct him, the assumption would be that the horse knew what the person wanted and then decided not to do it. But I know from experience myself, which is why working with Ray and Bill and Bill Dorrance and his younger brother Tom and with Buck Brannaman as well, for many years I did work with all of them, I found out that I was very quick to correct and very quick to say, that's not what I want, that's not what I want. And it was finally Bill who pointed out to me that I didn't really know what I wanted. Because if you're not thinking about where you want the feet, in what sequence, at what speed, and when, then there's no way to offer the information to the horse that would allow him to do what you want. So the first thing is going to be to know what you want. And
oh, that matters so much. In lots of the horse work I do, we talk about intention and holding a clear picture of what you want. So that really crosses many, many disciplines.
Yeah, I think it does. And so one of the things that I learned that was very, very helpful is that the horse can read sureness. And if you're not sure what you want, you can be darn sure the horse knows that you're not sure, and depending on what kind of people he's met before you and what kind of animal he is, how he's treated, how he's kept, is he in a stall 8 days a week, is he overfed, underworked, is he living next to someone he doesn't like, has he had, is he on a lease share, has he just had his teeth done, had his feet done, he's got a stall cleaner, someone who changes the rug. You know, how many people are in these horses' lugs has a lot to do with whether you're going to get a response from the horse that is even close to what you want, and that's assuming you even know. So I think it's really important to have some empathy for these animals and empathy for how confusing it can be for a flight animal who is born and raised to be in a herd to be boxed or tugged all day long in service to the human in the ways that those people are able to maintain them. I'm not making any comments about stalled horses because that's better than having no life at all. I mean, someone's paying the bills, that's a good thing. But truly, they are meant to go around like goats and sheep and cows, and it's very rare today that people allow that for various reasons. But let's just say that whether they're kept in the best of circumstances or in compromised situations where there's plenty of confusion and the horse is constantly being told he's incorrect, the thing to remember is that if you just are humble enough and gentle enough with yourself and not worried too much and just say to yourself and to the horse, you know, listen, horse, I'm really not sure. I know what I want you to do, but I'm not sure how to ask. And there's just something about the truth in that. Hearing it, saying it, that it'll just take the tension out of the whole situation, and it'll increase the horse's ability to try for you. And
right.
By saying that, it generally tends to reduce the defensiveness in a person and some of the tension in a person who wants to get it right on the first try. Because you can't really get it right on the first try or the tenth try because you've got another living being there that is not a predator, that you may or may not know the background on, and that is built to run. And if you're, you know, trying to do all you can with a high-protein diet and confinement and a trainer and this and that and four or five other people involved, it makes a very, very confusing, tough start to have an effective connection. And what most people are kind of satisfied to do is to give them a treat, call it a day, brush them on the face, and go home. But that gets old quick, and these horses' lives, to be honest with you, are balanced in a very delicate way between the price of the semen that created them and the cost per pound of horse meat on the other end of their lives. And in the world we have today where people are trying to get enough to eat, it's the lucky horse that has anybody to pay his bills, to be honest. So I think that the best way to go forward is to find someone who has a relationship with a horse that you think looks nice, that the horse is happy, not stressed, not, you know, being beat up or bullied or anything, and the person isn't afraid and the person isn't overconfident or trying to show off or anything. That's kind of a sign that things aren't quite right when there's a lot of bravado and a lot of showing off. But generally speaking, those folks are in the minority, and in the end, the horse will, they stay in it long enough, the horse will get them straightened out. But I think really just to go forward gently and with some confidence that the horses are very forgiving. And if you're honest with them and with yourself about your limits and your ardent desire, your fervent desire to to do the best you can for them, I really think those horses will find a way to get along with you. I've never seen it any other way. And, you know, there can be some, you know, when you're beginning, everybody's an expert except you. When you're in the start of it, it's very, very hard to find someone you trust. Then you find two or three more people you trust the same week, and suddenly you got 10 or 11 people's different ideas about what's right or wrong to do with your horse in your head. You're trying it all, and the horse all of a sudden doesn't like you. So I just say the best thing to do is to slow down and touch the horse, maybe not on the face if you can avoid it. Try to get your brushes out and start brushing his back, or if you're not comfortable putting on the halter and rope, learn how to do it. You got to learn your knots. You got to learn how to tie your horse up. Got to learn how to put the halter on without dragging the halter into his eyes or manhandling his head in a way. I shouldn't say manhandling, but just being rough with his head. These are very, very sensitive animals. And, you know, Ray Hunt used to say, before you get your first horse, why don't you have a pet cow for a year? I never really understood what he meant by that, but he was pretty sure that if a person got a pet cow and kept it for a year, they wouldn't be crowding their horses' heads, because a cow will put a horn right between your ribs and leave it there until you're good, ready to go. And, you know, this tendency that we all have to want to just get up close and personal and kiss our horses on the nose, it is just the hardest thing to resist in the whole wide world. We all love to do it, and some of us get away with it, some of us don't. But to really be respectful of the horse, the best thing to do is to express your affection with your body back behind the elbow and have someone show you how that's done. And don't be, you know, don't hesitate to get some help. Don't hesitate to go to, you know, a place where there's some instruction given or some local person who's, you know, maybe not just, you know, you just can't say. There are kids that know how to handle horses that are right down to 5 and 6 and 10 years old, and there are adults that are 60 that don't. So I can't.
Well, that's the truth, and that's some good advice to watch lots of lessons and spend time with your horse. So many people just go and get on and ride, and they don't spend time with their horses, and that can profoundly change your relationship with your horse.
Well, I think there's one thing I could mention here, which is that the horse you ride is the horse you lead. So if the leading and the groundwork isn't going well, the relationship on the ground is tough, the lead rope isn't something they understand, your understanding of how to manage and coil a rope that is, most of the people have, they just get a little 6-foot rope from the local feed store, and without realizing that a horse may need to run or move out a little bit from you, maybe you might want to get a rope that's 15, 18, 20, or 25 feet long. That's the equipment that I use, because that's the amount of space a horse truly needs to navigate.
So tell us more about why you developed your own equipment and what your equipment's like, because I think people would be interested to see why you use a long rope.
Well, when you think about the way it looks to see someone walking down the side of the road with a dog on a 6-foot leash that weighs, you know, 15 pounds, and then you've got a horse that's, you know, 16, 17 hands and weighs, you know, anywhere up to, say, 1,000 or 1,300 pounds on the same 6-foot lead, all he has to do is just look over his shoulder and he's already dragged you under his feet. So it's really a matter of safety. It's not a matter of the longer the rope, the farther away you can let the horse get and still determine his direction will be the effectiveness you have over his speed. Because if you can influence the way he tips his head on a short rope, then it shouldn't be too hard to have someone find someone to teach you how to influence the direction of his head on a longer rope. You can do it yourself if you have enough room and time. There's plenty of things on the internet. There's more than enough trainers out there that would be happy to show people how to manage a horse. The question is, you know, it's always going to be a matter of time and money. Who's got the time? Who's got the money? Who's available? But Bill had a wonderful thing he said. He said, good horsemanship is handed down from one friend to another.
And that's really true. I mean, I think, just for an example, my sister's horse is at the farm where our friends have their horses, and it's now been managed and run by one of our friends since the original owner passed away for I don't know, 30, 40 years Lynn's been running that farm. And it really is something that still belongs to all of us who rode there when we were 10.
It's a wonderful thing. It really is. So, and I mean, I have to say, you know, a tremendous amount of my time is donated to people who don't know where to go for help, who are sitting out in the middle of who knows where, trying to figure out what to do with the horse that just ran off with them, trying to figure out what to do with the horse that just stepped on their, you know, got kicked their farrier, stepped on their own foot, jerked loose and pulled away from the halter, pulled out of their halter and left. You know, there are people that are just crying over their horse right now as we sit here talking. And I've been there too, by the way. I have sat and bawled like a baby over horses that I mistreated out of ignorance and that I didn't understand and couldn't get along with and wanted to sell but loved too much to part with and knew I wasn't safe with and all that stuff. I mean, this is how you move forward. You just got to be honest about these little impasses that you reach, and then you reach out and try to get some help. You know, that's it. There's nothing wrong with saying I could use some more information. We're not born knowing how to raise a child or raise a dog or raise a horse. You got to figure it out.
That's well, one thing I've seen in the horse community is there's plenty of opportunity and desire for people to interact with each other, to talk about training and their horse and their last good ride and whether they want to take up jumping or go on a longer trail ride, maybe do a 25-mile ride or try a different style of riding. I mean, people in the horse world do seem to want to interact with each other.
Well, I think now more than ever we're really finding that there's a tremendous community out there, and I think when you get right down to it, the real horse lovers don't care whether they're talking to someone who rides a gated horse or a western horse or has a draft horse or a mini. The real horse lovers really just love the animal. They're going to try to help anybody who's got any horse question, because the animals pretty much work the same whether they weigh 80 pounds or, you know, 1,800 pounds. They've got a similar mind. It's just a matter of what we're doing with them and what kind of environment each individual horse has been required to either tolerate, submit to, or enjoy. And I think the more we can find out about the horse's needs for companionship and for freedom to move around and run, the more empathetic we will be when they don't please us. Realize we have to look at our own contribution. It's a very brave thing to do, but we got to look at our own contribution to the problem when a horse isn't doing what we want.
Boy, that's the truth. You know, I was always told that the first thing you do when you're having a problem with a horse is look at yourself and see how you contributed to that and what your horse was trying to tell you from his behavior. Leslie, if people want to find out more about your work and be in touch with you, how can people find you? What's your web address? And tell us a little bit about your Facebook.
Okay, I can do that. I have a website that just takes my name, and right at this moment, like many people's relationship with the internet, mine is in transition. But you can find out if you Google my name, Leslie Desmond. You'll come up with two main things. You'll come up with my name, LeslieDesmond.com, will bring you to my website,
and that's DESMOND.
Yes, and it's the American spelling, not the English spelling. It's LeslieDesmond. And I will just say, I don't know when this is going to air live, but in the next few days, that website will be updated. So I would ask for some little bit of leeway and forgiveness if people get on there and don't find what they want. There is a shop connected with that. It's called shop.leslieDesmond.com, and the shop and my website are both being updated at the moment, but that's one way to get to me there. And the other thing is that I've got a very wonderful group of people, many of whom I know and some I don't know, but that are becoming acquaintances through something I've been doing on Facebook for almost a year called Leslie Live on Facebook. And that's when I take questions and talk about things that have to do with how we manage, how we train, how we treat our horses. And this is horses regardless of your riding style, your age, your goals. just is just about what does the horse need us to know and how are we going to get from point A to point B, whether we're on a jumper or a cutter or a reiner or some, we're working for a horse rescue, or you could be first time in 4-H. I really do try to have a wide umbrella to bring everybody in so that we don't lose anybody, because if we lose someone and we make someone feel left out, well, guess who else gets left out? That horse they have in the backyard that might be really misunderstood or need a little bit of help for their person.
So, and I have to add that your group is really receptive to interacting with one another and reaching out to each other and trying to find people that are in the same area. So it is a wonderful thing to check out, and that's on Facebook under Leslie Desmond. And until next week, we are wrapping up here. So thanks for joining us. Thank you so much, Leslie, for being our guest today. And thank you, listeners, for listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets today with your host, Sally Morgan, holistic physical therapist for pets and people, and Dr. Judy Morgan's sister on DreamVision7Radio.com. Thank you so much, Leslie.
You're welcome. That was fun. Thanks, Sally.
All right.
Bye-bye.
That's all for today. Find more answers to your questions next time on Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets every Monday and Tuesday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time by going to DreamVision7Radio.com. Join holistic veterinarian Dr. Judy to discover healthy options for raising your pets in a more holistic manner. Visit DrJudyMorgan.com to learn more.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.